Then you forfeit your chance to share in the division of the galaxy at the Empire's victory, Deesra warned, wondering why he was even bothering trying to talk Control into this. Certainly he didn't really care if the Kavriloop pirates walked or not. He needn't have worried.
We'll take our chances, Control said. You may be a genius, Admiral, but frankly I don't think even you can pull it off.
As you wish, Thrawn said. You will, of course, still keep the Preybird production line operating.
We'll keep it running, Control promised. In fact, I'll give you our interest in the whole operation as a welcome back present.
He smirked, but in Deesra's eyes the expression rang just a little bit hollow.
And as a token of our past association with the Empire, and our friendly parting of the ways.
Of course,
Thrawn said, giving him a knowing smile in return.
And just in case you're wrong about the extent of my genius.
The smirk twitched and vanished.
A lot of fringe groups got caught in the middle the last time you went up against the New Republic, Admiral,
he said.
I'd rather the Kavriloop pirates not wind up in that position.
I think that can be avoided,
Thrawn agreed.
Certainly, as long as the Preybirds continue to be delivered.
You've got a deal,
Control said, his eyes flicking to the Mistral as he cautiously lowered his arms.
If that's all, then, I have an organization to restructure. Good luck to you, Admiral, and to you, Captain Control,
Thrawn replied, inclining his head slightly.
I don't expect to see you or any of your pirates in Imperial space again.
Control swallowed visibly.
No, sir,
he said, as he backed toward the door to the secret passageway.
You won't.
He slipped into the doorway and vanished.
I hope letting him go was the right thing to do,
Deesra muttered. Pelion was at the other end of the passageway, and they only had Control's word that he wasn't interested in revenge.
Don't worry,
Thrawn assured him.
As you already pointed out, he put a great deal of time and thought into maneuvering Zophipir this way. No, he'll head directly back to his ship with this tale of woe, and that will be that.
What about her?
Tierce asked, nodding at the woman. He had lowered his blaster as ordered, but he was still holding it ready at his side.
She did come in with them.
I came in behind them,
the woman corrected.
I overheard a comment about clones and pirate arrangements with the Empire, and...
Clones? Deesra cut her off. Who was talking about clones?
She regarded him coolly.
A couple of New Republic agents, named Han Solo and Lando Calrissian,
she said.
You may have heard of them.
I believe we have, yes,
Thrawn said with an easy smile.
Actually, we're trying to make contact with them at the moment.
Her lip twitched.
I'll bet you are.
But more interesting to me,
Thrawn continued,
would be to hear your response to the offer I made to you a few minutes ago.
She frowned.
What offer?
Don't you remember?
Thrawn asked.
I pointed out that your recovery to my appearance had been a bit slow, but otherwise not bad. I then spoke of the Empire's wish to acquire allies.
Her forehead furrowed.
What are you talking about?
She demanded.
You made that offer to Zophip, not me. You didn't even know I was there.
On the contrary,
Thrawn said quietly.
I knew full well you were there. And if you'll think back to my offer, you may notice that I never mentioned either Zophip or his pirates.
She stared at him, her face struggling as she obviously tried to sort out whether he was being truthful or feeding her a load of lies. Plim weaving yet another of his spells. And even with the audience prejudiced against him, it appeared to be working.
but right now Deesra didn't have time to enjoy the show. "I'm sure you and the lady have a great deal to discuss, Admiral," he murmured, taking a step back toward the door. "If you'll excuse me, though, I need to get back to Admiral Pelion."
"Certainly, Your Excellency," Thrawn said, dismissing him with a wave of his hand. "Perhaps we'll move to another room to continue our discussion."
He lifted an eyebrow at the woman.
"Assuming, that is, you're interested in what my new empire has to offer the Mistral."
"We've never worked for the Empire before,"
the woman said cautiously, as Deesra stepped to the door and pulled it open.
"That was Palpatine's empire," Thrawn reminded her. "The empire I propose to rebuild..."
The rest of the sales pitch was lost as Deesra closed the door behind him and hurried down the corridors. The secret passageway would have been faster, but Pelion didn't know about that, and Deesra would just as soon it be kept a secret. Switching corridors, rounding the last corner, he headed down the main hallway toward the door guards.
"Has Admiral Pelion asked about me?"
he asked as the guards saluted and stepped aside.
"No, Your Excellency,"
one of them said, as the double doors began to swing open.
"Actually, he's already left."
Deesra came to an abrupt stop.
"What do you mean, he's left?"
he echoed, peering in through the opening doors. The office was indeed empty.
"Where did he go?"
"He didn't say, Your Excellency,"
the guard said. Deesra stepped into the office, frowning around the room as the doors closed behind him. This made no sense. Why would Pelion and that slinker Drafe just leave? Surely they hadn't simply decided to let him off the hook.
His eyes fell on his desk.
He was around the side of the desk in 5 quick strides, swearing the whole way, feeling a clammy sweat breaking out on his face.
No, they couldn't have.
But they had.
The hidden desk drawer had been forced open, and the data cards were gone.
Chapter 23.
Deesra's groping hand found the comm switch.
"Tierce, get in here,"
he managed, his voice sounding odd through the pounding of his heart in his ears.
"Now."
He switched the comm to the guards outside.
"When did Pelion leave?"
he demanded.
5 or 6 minutes ago, Your Excellency,"
the voice came back. Which meant he would be out of the palace by now and headed for the spaceport, with the capital security forces who could have intercepted him dispersed uselessly around the city in their hunt for Solo and Calrissian. Deesra ground his teeth together. A vision of the grand scheme he'd worked so hard to create, collapsing in front of his eyes.
Everything was on those data cards. Everything!
Encrypted, of course, but if Pelion was able to decrypt them... And then, another even more awful thought jabbed up under his heart. Colonel Vermel, hidden away in a quiet little detention cell on Rimsey Station... It took nearly a minute to get the long-range comm keyed through the various relays to the Rimsey system. And when he did... Across the room, the secret door opened, and Tyr stepped into the office.
"We have them,"
he announced with grim satisfaction. "Their ship's in Docking Bay 155.
"Pelion's got the data cards!"
Deesra cut him off viciously.
"What?"
Tyr demanded, picking up his pace.
"The data cards, fool!"
Deesra snarled.
"The vengeance scheme, our arrangement with Zothip's pirates, names and details of the industrial financial web I've been using, everything!"
Tears hissed between his teeth, throwing a look at the empty drawer.
"Incredible,"
he said, almost as if talking to himself.
"He actually broke into your private records. I would never have thought him capable of doing that. It must have been Drafe's idea."
"We can get the details at the trial,"
Deesra snapped.
"Forget whose idea it was. What are we going to do?"
"What do we have to do?"
Tyrs said with a shrug.
"They're encrypted, aren't they? By the time Pelion decrypts them..."
"He already has,"
Deesra cut him off.
"At least well enough. He knows Vermel's at Rimsey Station!
Tirsa's face hardened.
How do you know?
Because I just tried to get through to them!
Deesra gritted. Pelians had all the transmissions to the entire system blocked off!
Tears threw a dark look at the blank comm display.
Fast work,
he murmured.
Very good, Admiral.
Never mind that! Deesra snapped, almost shaking with fear and rage and frustration. Didn't Tears understand the whole plan was about to collapse on top of them? We've got to stop him. We've got to pull Vermel out before Pelion gets there!
No,
Tears said, his voice suddenly decisive.
What we have to do is catch Solo and Calrissian before they get to their ship, and have our Grand Admiral put on a show for them.
Are you insane? Deesra snarled. To Kessel with Solo, this is my neck we're talking about!
Calm down, Deesra,
Tears said, his voice like a slap of cold water in the Moff's face.
Whatever Pelion's got doesn't matter. You understand? It doesn't matter. We have the ultimate clear card. Grand Admiral Thrawn. All he has to do is take command and declare everything we've done to have been at his direction. Now snap out of it!
Deesra took a shuddering breath, glaring at Tears in silent, impotent fury. Silent fury that the guardsman was dismissing so casually all the years Deesra had put into this project. Impotent fury, because he was right. Fine, he choked out. So we forget Pelion. What do we do instead?
You weren't listening,
Tears said, his eyes still narrowed as he watched Deesra's face.
We've got their landing bay number. That Mr. Woman Julin rode in with them as a stowaway. The Admiral and I have to get there before they get back. You understand?
Yes, I understand, Deesra growled, his brain only now starting to unfreeze from the shock and panic. I'm not a child, you know.
Glad to hear it,
Tears said coldly.
Because while we're out there, you're going to talk to Julin, find out what she wants, and what it'll take to bring the Mistral onto our side.
Deesra felt his mouth drop open a centimeter. The reports he'd heard about the Mistral.
You want to try to make allies of them? Have you lost your mind? They hate the Empire.
We need a new fringe group to replace the Kavrilu Pirates,
Tears said, his voice one of exaggerated patience.
And we do not have time to argue about it. Thrawn and Julin are in the library across from your quarters. Go take over so that he and I can get to the spaceport. Understand? Now move!
The snapped command made Deesra jump.
Don't ever talk to me that way again, Major, he warned, his voice quietly deadly. Ever.
Then don't ever fall apart on me again, Your Excellency,
Tears countered. If he was either impressed or intimidated by Deesra's warning, he didn't show it.
Now get moving.
The legion of Imperial troops Han had feared would be ringing the spaceport wasn't there. Neither were the hard-eyed guards he'd expected at the entry point, the monitor droids along the access street, or the stormtroopers at the door to their docking bay. In fact, from all appearances, it looked like they'd gotten completely away with it. And that all by itself was enough to worry him. A lot. Lando felt it too.
I don't like this, Han,
he muttered, glancing around the street behind them as Han unlocked the bay door.
This is way too easy.
Yeah, I know,
Han agreed, taking one last look around as he took Lobot's arm and guided him through the doorway. Lando's on-the-fly changes to his implant's programming over the past hour may have thrown the Imperials off the scent, but they'd also left Lobot rather dazed. If it came to a fight at the Lady Luck's ramp, he was going to be no help at all. The dark passageway through the docking bay's service and supply area was also deserted.
Soon as we're aboard, you get the engines fired up,
Han told Lando as they stepped out onto the permacrete beneath the open sky. The Lady Luck was still there, looking just the way they'd left her.
I'll handle the weapons. Maybe Mogut can get into the spaceport computer and get us a quick exit slot, so...
That won't be necessary.
A quiet voice came from behind them. Han spun around, yanking out his appropriated blaster. Behind them, on the permacrete, had appeared the flickering full-sized hollow of a man. A man with blue skin, wearing a white Imperial uniform. Lando made a strange sound in the back of his throat.
It's him,
he murmured. Han nodded, feeling numb. It was indeed Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Please lay your weapons on the ground,
Thrawn directed.
I'd prefer to speak with you face to face, but understandably have no desire to be shot.
Understandably,
Han agreed, keeping a firm grip on his blaster, his eyes darting around the landing bay. There must be some actual troops in here somewhere. The Hollow smiled.
Come now, Captain Solo. Surely you don't think you'll be able to simply blast your way out of Bastion, as you have from so many other systems during your checkered career. Don't you wish to see your wife and children again?
Han adjusted his grip on his blaster, feeling sweat gathering on his forehead.
Yeah, that's kind of the point, isn't it?
He said. The Hollow shook his head.
You misunderstand, Captain. You have nothing to fear from me. All I want is a few words with you, and then you and your companions will be free to go your way.
He nodded toward Lando.
Ask Captain Calrissian. I allowed him to leave my Star Destroyer.
This isn't exactly the same, Lando said tightly. This is your hidden capital. You aren't gonna want anyone knowing where it is.
Come now, Captain. Do you really think I would expect knowledge of Bastion's current location to die with you? The seat of Imperial authority has been moved before many times. It can certainly be moved again. Still, you apparently need more persuasion.
A movement at the corner of his eye caught Han's attention. He looked up to see a row of stormtroopers lined up along the rim of the landing bay's storage area roof. Blaster rifles trained on them. He sighed. They should have made a dash for the Lady Luck when the Hollow first appeared, instead of letting Thrawn stall them this way. Too late now.
How'd you find us?
He asked, setting the blaster's safety and laying the weapon on the ground in front of him.
It wasn't difficult,
the Hollow said, as Lando reluctantly followed suit with his slug thrower.
I knew none of you had slicing expertise needed to invade the special files. I suspected you were using a verpine for that, and so instructed my men to run a scan on those comm frequencies.
Looking for an echo,
Han said, nodding.
I would have sworn we cut that off before you could get a fix.
You misunderstand, Captain. I wasn't looking for an echo.
Abruptly, the Hollow vanished. And from around a stack of storage crates to their right, Thrawn himself appeared, his white uniform dazzlingly bright in the afternoon sunlight. But no more dazzling than the gleaming armor of the 6 stormtroopers flanking him in guard position. On second thought, Han decided, a mad dash for the Lady Luck wouldn't have been such a clever plan after all.
I was merely seeking confirmation that your slicer was a verpine,
Thrawn continued, as he walked up to them.
Once you supplied that confirmation by blanketing those biocom frequencies, all I had to do was search the spaceport records for a ship that had supposedly landed here 8, 12, or 17 days before the drone probe you followed in from the Parshoon Ubiquitrate contact station.
Wait a minute, you've lost me,
Han said, frowning.
8, 12, or 17 days?
Thrawn smiled.
Those are important numbers to the Verpines,
he said.
Not consciously, perhaps,
but nevertheless anchored deeply within them. It was obvious that your Verpine was the master slicer of your group. Therefore, he would have been the one to make any alterations in the spaceport records to hide your ship's location. Need I go on?
No,
Hans said, a cold chill running through him. Back at his and Leia's Orowood Tower retreat, Lando had claimed to have seen Thrawn, had claimed it, had argued it, had maintained it despite all the evidence and arguments to the contrary. Han had wondered then how his friend could have been so easily spooked. Now, finally, he understood.
Good,
Thrawn said, peering at him with a depth of understanding Han didn't care for at all.
Then let us get down to business.
He raised his voice slightly.
Major?
From behind another stack of boxes to the left, a youngish man wearing Major's insignia appeared, his eyes wary on the prisoners. In his right hand he held a blaster, in his left, a data card.
As you may recall our last conversation, Captain Calrissian, Thrawn went on as the Major walked toward them, you suggested that if I wanted to save the New Republic from its current crisis, I should simply give you a complete copy of the Ka'amas document.
Yes, I remember,
Lando said, as the Major came to a stop a meter in front of him.
You told me that would take too much time.
Less time than I thought, as it turned out,
Thrawn agreed.
There it is.
The Major held out the data card.
What do you mean, there it is?
Lando asked, looking at the data card like he expected it to explode in his face.
The Ka'amas document,
Thrawn said simply.
It's yours.
Take it. Slowly, hesitantly, Lando took the card.
What's the catch?
He asked, as the Major took a step back.
There's no catch, Thrawn assured him. As I told you before, I merely wish to help.
Sure you do,
Han put in, his words sounding harsh in his ears after the Grand Admiral's more urbane tones.
Like you helped wreck the combined clans building on Bothawee?
The glowing red eyes focused on him.
Explain.
There was an Imperial team behind that riot,
Han said stiffly. Beside him, Lando was making shushing noises, and he had to admit that accusing Thrawn to his face like this was probably not the most politic thing he could have done. But it had been his neck on the line there, his and Leia's, and he was not going to just stand here and let Thrawn get away with making conciliatory noises. Not after all the death and destruction that riot had caused.
We found the redirection crystal they used, with their Zerol Nightstinger sniper blaster.
He had hoped for a flicker of guilt, or at least a twinge of recognition, but instead Thrawn merely gave him a brittle smile.
Yes, a Zerol Nightstinger,
he said, his voice tinged with bitterness.
Apparently still a favored tool of assassins and saboteurs. But in this case you're looking the wrong direction. The Empire's last Zerols were stolen 6 months ago from a ubiquitous cache on Marquara.
His eyes glittered.
If you want to find them, I suggest you search the private estate of High Counselor Borsk Phalia.
Han exchanged startled glances with Lando.
Phalia?
Yes,
Thrawn said.
It was his private army who stole them.
No,
Han said. The word coming automatically.
That's ridiculous!
And yet, Phalia had known he and Leia were going to the combined clans building to check out the true state of Bothan finances, a job they'd somehow never gotten around to finishing after the riot. And it was just the sort of backblading stunt the Bothans were famous for. Thrawn shrugged.
I'm not going to try to convince you. The truth is there for you to find if you care to.
In the meantime, he nodded toward the data card in Lando's hand.
Good day, gentlemen. Have a good voyage.
Without waiting for an answer, he turned and headed for the exit, half of his stormtrooper guard falling into formation around him. The remaining three stormtroopers and the major waited until he was out of sight before turning and following. As they too vanished through the doorway, the row of stormtroopers above them turned and headed away across the roof. And a moment later, Han, Lando, and Lobot were alone.
Han turned to Lando, found the other staring at him from under hooded eyelids. "Well, Lando," he said, trying to keep his voice calm. It wasn't one of his better efforts. "I guess I owe you an apology."
"Never mind the apologies,"
Lando said, stooping to retrieve their weapons as he ran a quick glance around the empty rooftop.
"Let's just get out of here, okay?"
"Yeah,"
Han said, taking Lobot's arm and turning him toward the Lady Lux ramp.
"Let's."
"You should have seen their faces,"
Flim said, swirling his drink around in his glass, his moody voice in odd contrast with what should have been gloating words.
"They were so petrified and trying so hard not to show it. It was really rather funny."
"I'm sure you could hardly keep from breaking out laughing," Deesra said sourly. "The question is, did they buy it?"
"They bought it,"
Tierce assured him, sliding a data card out of his data pad and picking up the next one from his stack. Alone among the three of them, he seemed to have no doubts about Flynn's performance.
"Our Grand Admiral was as smooth as polished transparasteel. He didn't even flinch when Solo threw the Bothawee commando team in his face."
"The Bothawee team?" Deesra demanded sharply. "Our Bothawee team? Navid's group?"
"Relax. He was talking about them in conjunction with the combined clans building riot,"
Tyr said.
"There was no indication they know Navid's back there now."
"I hope not,"
Deesra growled. On the other hand, that whole scheme was listed on the data cards that Pelion had stolen from him. Still, it was unlikely Pelion would run straight to Coruscant to warn them, even if he stopped sifting through the financial data long enough to notice it was even there.
"How did they find out we staged the riot?"
Tyr shrugged.
"Who knows? Doesn't matter, though. The Admiral deflected them nicely."
He looked over at Flim.
"What was all that about a weapons cache being stolen from Marquara? I don't remember hearing about that."
Flim sipped at his drink.
"You don't remember?"
he said.
"Because I made the whole thing up. I figured it would..."
"You made it up?" Deesra cut him off. "What kind of fool stunt was that?"
"One that got Solo off my back,"
Flim said stiffly.
"Why? You disapprove?"
"Yes, I disapprove," Deesra bit out. "It's out of character. Thrawn didn't go around making things up. If he didn't know something, he said so."
"Calm down, Your Excellency,"
Tyr said. But he didn't look all that happy either, as he gazed at Flim.
"He had to say something. We can't be offering Coruscant the Carte Mars document with one hand, helping foment riots with the other. At least he's bought us the time it would take them to check up on it."
Deesra snorted.
"However little that is."
"However little it is will be enough,"
Tyr said firmly.
"In 7 days the New Republic Civil War is set to begin. At that point, no one's going to care about a few riots and a handful of Zeron Night Stingers."
He nodded back toward the secret door.
"And speaking of buying things, how did your talk go with our guest? Are we going to be able to buy their services?"
"I don't know,"
Deesra said, his mouth tightening briefly.
"Mistral don't work for Imperials. She must have told me that 15 times. On the other hand, she did agree to call one of their leaders to come talk to us. And there is something that they very much want. But I wasn't quite able to get her to tell me what that is."
"What they want is revenge,"
Flim said soberly.
"Like everyone else these days."
"Revenge against whom?"
Deesra asked. Flim shrugged.
The story around the Fringe is that their world was devastated in a war with person or persons unknown some number of decades ago. The money the Mistral earn hiring out their services still supposedly goes to support the survivors.
What's the name of the world? Deesra asked.
I don't know, Flim said. They keep it very quiet. Probably afraid whoever did it would come back and finish the job.
She said something about revenge for Laradian. Tyrus mused. Could that be the system?
I have no idea, Flim shrugged. I don't even know who or what Laradian is.
What do you mean you don't know? Deesra said, frowning. You sounded like you knew all about it back there.
I also sounded like I knew she was hiding behind the door the whole time. Flim countered patiently. The whole trick behind being a good con man is convincing the target you know more than you really do.
Deesra grimaced. Con men. Of course. I forgot.
Don't go all high and nobly indignant on me, Deesra. Flim warned, his face darkening. Your Kavrilu pirate raids on New Republic shipping were as much a con as this is. So is your precious little vengeance movement, for that matter. He added, shifting his glare to Tyrus. A few Imperial agitators pretending to be a huge group of civilian malcontents? Not to mention this whole Thrawn charade. You don't like cons? Well, too bad. You're up to your necks in them, both of you. Not that you've got any choice. Not with the shape the Empire's in.
He dropped his feet back onto the floor with a muffled thud and stood up.
And I'll tell you something else, he added. If and when you ever get to the point where you've got all the military strength you want, you're still going to need me.
He slapped at his chest.
I'm the only one of this group who knows the Fringe, who the pirates and mercs are. Where to find a good bounty hunter on short notice. You want to hire more privateers, you'll have to come to me. I'm the one who could finger Julin as a Mistral just by the way she fought.
We're not arguing, Deesra said, a little taken aback by the fire of the con man's tirade. So what are you trying to say?
I'm saying that if and when this Hand of Thrawn of yours shows up, you might not need my Thrawn masquerade anymore.
Flim shot back.
But you'll still need me.
For a long moment, the room was silent. Flim glared back and forth between the two of them, breathing a little heavily.
Tears broke the silence first.
You finished?
He asked mildly. Flim studied his face, and some of the stiffness seemed to leave his back.
Yes, he muttered. This is going to stir the pot, Tears. From Coruscant to the Outer Rim. Unless the Hand of Thrawn is living under a rock, there's no way he's going to miss this.
I told you before that we could protect you from him,
Tears said.
And we will. Don't worry about it.
Here.
Flim took a long drink from his glass.
Here. Sure.
Lando pulled back the hyperdrive lever, and in front of them the stars of Bastion's sky stretched into star lines.
Well,
he said. He'd meant the word to come out sounding casual, but all it sounded was hoarse.
I guess he really meant it, about letting us go.
Beside him, Han didn't answer. For that matter, he probably hadn't said 10 words since Thrawn had walked out of the docking bay. Lando looked sideways at his friend, wondering if it was time he started worrying about him. Han must have felt the other's gaze.
It was really him, wasn't it?
He said quietly, his own gaze still on the swirling patterns of hyperspace. Lando nodded, his throat feeling tight.
Perfectly calm, perfectly in control. 3 steps ahead of us the whole way, he said. No one else but Thrawn.
I wouldn't have believed it.
Han looked at Lando, his mouth twitching.
I guess I didn't believe it,
he amended.
Whatever I said to you back at the Oralwood Tower.
Forget it,
Lando said, waving the apology away.
I was right there that first time, and I didn't even believe it. At least, I didn't want to.
Han shook his head.
We're in trouble, Lando,
he said.
From now on, we can't trust anything we see. Anything we see, anything we hear, anything we think we ought to do. Not with Thrawn back on the scene.
I don't know,
Lando said doubtfully.
Thrawn or no Thrawn, the Empire is still down to 8 sectors. Maybe this is really all he's going for. Hoping to confuse Coruscant so badly it just freezes up.
Who knows?
Han growled, some heat starting to seep into his voice. At least he didn't sound dazed and demoralized anymore. About time, Lando thought.
That's what drives you so crazy about him. You try to do something, and odds are it's exactly what he wanted you to do. You stand still and don't do anything, and he runs a smart rope around you.
So what do you suppose he expects us to do with this?
Lando asked, holding up the data card.
I don't know what he expects,
Han said, reaching over and taking it.
But I tell you what we're going to do. First, we're going to read it and see if it gives those names everyone's so hot to get hold of. Second, we're going to call Leia as soon as we're in range of the holonet and let her know we've got it. And third,
he jerked a thumb over his shoulder.
We're going to turn Mogad loose on the thing and have him check it 16 ways from center. See if he can find whatever surprises Thrawn has tucked away.
Lando eyed the data card warily.
You think there are surprises?
It's Thrawn,
Han said simply. Lando nodded.
Right.
Getting out of his seat, Han gave the instruments one final check.
Come on. I don't trust this thing anywhere near the ship's computer,
he said, heading for the cockpit door.
Let's get a data pad and find out what it says.
Chapter 24.
The first navigational stop the wildcard had made after leaving Dayark had showed nothing ahead. Nothing but the twisting glow of the Cathal Rift and the fiery frozen wisps of ionized gas streamers and miniature nebulae that looked as if they'd been torn from it by violence. So at the second stop, and the third, until Shada had begun to wonder if the legendary lost world of Exicron was truly nothing but a myth. On the fifth stop, they found it.
It looks quite pleasant,
3PO commented somewhat doubtfully from Shada's side as they gazed out the wild card's bridge viewport at the small planet rapidly approaching.
I do hope they will be friendly.
I wouldn't count on it,
Shada warned him, feeling an unfamiliar and unpleasant dryness in her mouth. Down there somewhere, if Jade and Calrissian were right, Georges Cardass would be waiting for them. At the helm, O'Donnell half turned in his seat.
Shouldn't we have the turbo lasers ready? He asked Card. Just in case they're not happy at having their privacy infringed on?
Shada looked at Card. He was hiding his nervousness well, but she herself had no trouble seeing it.
We're here to talk, not fight,
he reminded O'Donnell, his voice steady.
I don't want anyone down there getting the wrong impression.
Yes, but after Dayark...
We're here to talk,
Card repeated, his tone leaving no room for argument.
Is he she? Are we picking up any sensor probes? Or transmissions, Jin?
No probes yet, Chieftain,
the Tagorian said. Her fur, Shada noted, had fluffed out just noticeably. Apparently she'd picked up on Card's mood, too.
Nothing of transmissions either, Captain,
Chin added.
Perhaps they not see us come in. Oh, they see us all right,
Card said, a hint of grimness creeping into his tone.
The only question...
He broke off at a beep from the comm.
Incoming starship.
This is Admiral Trey David, second in command to Supreme Admiral Jose Aldar of the Exocron Combined Air Space Fleet.
A courteous but firm voice said,
Please identify yourselves.
Chin reached for his board.
No, I'll do it,
Carr told him, visibly bracing himself as he touched his comm switch.
This is Talon Card aboard the freighter Wild Card, Admiral David. Our intentions are totally peaceful. We'd like permission to land.
There was a long pause. A very long pause, in fact. Shada rubbed her knuckles gently, visualizing a heated argument going on in the Exocron Combined Fleet office.
Wild Card, this is Admiral David.
The voice came back.
I'm told you're here to see George Cardass. Can you confirm that?
Shada watched Card closely. But aside from a brief twitch at the corner of his mouth, there was no reaction.
Yes, I can,
he said, his voice a little hollow, but under control.
There's a vital matter I urgently need to discuss with him.
I see.
There was another pause, shorter this time.
Is he expecting you?
Another twitch of the lip.
I don't know if expecting is the proper word. I do believe he knows I'm coming.
Do you?
David said, his voice suddenly sounding a little odd.
Very well, Wildcard. You're cleared for Circle 15 at the Reen Tata City Military Landing Field. Coordinates are being sent to you now.
Thank you, Card said.
Got it,
O'Donnell muttered, studying his nav display.
Looks pretty straightforward.
We have an escort on the way,
David continued.
I trust I don't have to tell you to cooperate with them.
I understand completely, Card said. Will I be seeing you there?
I doubt it,
David said. And this time there was definitely a darkness in his voice.
But perhaps we'll all be lucky. You never know. David out.
For a moment, the bridge was quiet. Shada looked around at the others, at their tight faces and tense shoulders and grim expressions. If they hadn't known before what they were getting into, she decided, they knew now. And yet, she saw no indication that any of them were even thinking of trying to back out. A truly loyal, close-knit crew, completely dedicated to their chief. Much as Shada herself had once been dedicated to the ideals of the Mistral, even when the Mistral themselves had all but forgotten those ideals. Even in the face of the looming danger ahead, the memory of that loss still hurt.
Instructions, Captain?
O'Donnell asked quietly. Card didn't hesitate.
Take us down, he said.
Reen Tata City was a middling-sized cluster of military-style buildings, interspersed with about 50 landing pads of varying sizes, many with ships already settled down onto them. The military areas were in turn surrounded by a wide ring of civilian-style homes and businesses and community buildings. The whole thing was nestled up against the base of a short but rough-sided ridge of mountains, the city giving way to a grassy plain on its other sides. There was no shakedown like there had been at Pembroke 2, nor was there any sort of customs or entrance inquiry at all as the Wild Card headed into the surface. The two aging system patrol ships that Admiral David had sent escorted the freighter to its assigned landing circle, watched as it set down, then headed off again into the sky without comment. Around the other ships, hundreds of men and women and dozens of small vehicles were hurrying about various tasks of their own, completely ignoring the off-world ship that had set down in their midst. From all appearances, Card thought as he and the others started down the ramp, all of Exocron might be trying to pretend the visitors didn't exist. With one notable exception.
Good day, Captain Card.
Antuni beamed from the foot of the Wild Card's landing ramp.
Welcome to Exocron. I see that even without my help, you were able to find us. Hello, Shada. Hello, 3PO.
Hello, Master Entune.
3PO replied, sounding distinctly relieved to see a familiar face.
I confess, I had not expected to find you here.
There was some question about you as well, Entune said cheerfully. When I last saw you on Dayark, you seemed to be having pirate trouble.
He took a step closer to the ramp and peered up into the ship.
Will your charming Tagorian be joining us?
No. Isishi will be staying with the ship,
Card told him, eyeing the little man with some amusement. Isishi was an increasingly valued member of his crew, but charming was not a descriptive term that would have automatically sprung to mind.
Too bad, Entune said,
looking at Shada and 3PO again.
Is this it, then? You don't want to bring any others along?
Card felt his muscles tense up again, despite all his efforts to relax them. Certainly he wanted to bring more people along. The Wild Card's entire crew, for starters, plus the crews of the Starry Ice and the Aetherway, General Bell Iblis's complete New Republic task force, Rogue Squadron, and about 4 clans worth of Nogri warriors. But even if he had had such resources, it would be a futile gesture. Cardass was waiting for him, and bringing more people would only mean putting more people at risk. That wasn't why he was here.
Yes, he told Entune. This is it. Do I assume you're here to take us to Georges Cardass?
If you wish to see him,
the little man said, his eyes thoughtful on Card's face. Once again, as on Dayark, glimpses of the true Entune were peeking through the carefully crafted facade of harmlessness.
Well, shall we go?
He led the way to an open-topped landspeeder at the edge of the landing circle. A landspeeder, Card noted, that despite Entune's apparent surprise at the small size of the party, was only a 4-seater. Weaving his way expertly in and out of the rest of the traffic, the little man headed off toward the mountains.
What's going on here?
Shada asked, gesturing around them as Entune dodged around a particularly slow-moving fuel truck.
They're preparing for some sort of maneuvers, I expect,
the other said.
Military people are always maneuvering one direction or another.
How far is it to where we're meeting, Cardass?
Card asked, not particularly interested in what the Exocron Combined Airspace Fleet had on its agenda for the day.
Not far,
Entune assured him.
Do you see that light blue building straight ahead? The one just a bit up the slope of the mountain? That's where he is.
Card shaded his eyes from the sunlight. From this distance, at least, it was not a very impressive place. Not a fortress. Not even a mansion. In fact, as Entune cleared the military area and started across the more sparsely trafficked civilian section of the city, the light blue building ahead began to look more and more like a simple, unassuming house. Shada was apparently thinking along the same lines.
Is that where Cardass lives, or just where we're meeting him?
She asked. Entune threw her a quick smile.
It's always questions with you, isn't it? Such a good, thoughtful mind.
Asking questions is part of my job,
Shada countered.
And you haven't answered me.
Answering questions isn't part of my job, Entune said. Come now, there's no need for impatience. It's only a little farther. Just relax and enjoy the trip.
The blue house continued to look smaller and less impressive the closer they got. Smaller, less impressive, older, and considerably shabbier.
As you can see, it was built right up against the cliff face,
Entune commented, as they drove past the last cluster of other houses and started across a grassy field with a rapid creek running through the middle of it.
I believe the original owner thought that would provide extra stability during the winter winds. What happened to the left side?
Shada asked, pointing.
Did a wing get torn down? No, it was never built,
Antuni told her.
Cardass once began to add on to the house, but, well, you'll see.
An unpleasant tingle ran down Card's back. What do you mean, we'll see? What stopped him? Antuni didn't answer. Card glanced over at Shada, found her looking at him with an odd expression on her face. A minute later, they were there. Antuni brought the landspeeder to a smooth halt in front of a once white door whose paint had chipped and faded with age and neglect.
You lead the way,
Shada said to Antuni, sliding herself deftly between Card and the house.
I'll be behind you. Card will be behind me. Oh, no, that won't do at all, Antuni said.
He shook his head, a quick, nervous-looking movement.
Only Captain Card and I will be able to go in.
Shada's eyes narrowed.
Let me put it another way.
No, that's all right, Shada,
Card said, moving around her and taking a step toward the door. Away from the center of the group, with nothing between him and the blank and empty windows, he felt painfully exposed.
If Cardass only wants to see me, then that's the way it has to be.
Forget it,
Shada said flatly, catching hold of Card's arm and hauling him bodily to a stop.
Antuni, either I go in with him or he doesn't go in at all.
Shada, this isn't helping,
Card growled, glaring at her. Did she want all of them to be summarily shot down before he even had a chance to plead the New Republic's case?
If he wanted me dead, he could have done it at any of 100 points along the way. He could certainly do it right here.
I know that,
Shada shot back.
And it doesn't matter. I came along as your bodyguard, and that's what I'm going to do.
Card stared at her, a sudden strange sensation running through him. Back at that Orowood Tower meeting with Solo, Organa Solo, and Calrissian, Shada had merely agreed to come along on this trip to help out. When, during the 2.5 weeks since then, had that grudging agreement transmuted into the far deeper commitment of bodyguard?
Shada, I appreciate your concern,
he said quietly but firmly, reaching up to where she still gripped his arm and putting his hand gently on top of hers.
But you need to remember the big picture. My life and what happens to it isn't the most important thing at stake here.
I'm your bodyguard,
Shada said, just as quietly and just as firmly.
It's the most important thing to me. Please,
Antuni spoke up.
Please, I think you misunderstand. Captain Card and I must go in first, but you may certainly come in right behind us. It's simply that, well, you'll see.
Shada still didn't look happy, but she gave a reluctant nod.
All right, fine, she said. Just remember that if anything happens, you personally will be directly in my line of fire. You two first, then me, then 3PO.
Really, Mistress Shada? I'm sure it's not necessary for me to come in with you.
The droid hastened to assure her, taking a shuffling step back toward the landspeeder.
Perhaps I should remain here and guard the landspeeder.
Actually, he may be useful,
Antuni said, smiling reassuringly.
Come, 3PO. It'll be all right.
Yes, Master Antuni,
3PO said in a resigned tone. Moaning almost inaudibly to himself, he shuffled to a spot half a meter behind Shada.
But I must say, I have a bad feeling.
Good,
Antuni said cheerfully. The solemn moment passed. He was radiating his usual harmlessness again.
Shall we go?
The door was unlocked. Card followed the little man in, feeling more vulnerable than ever as they stepped out of the sunlight into a dank, gloomy room. A room that, to his surprise, had apparently not been used for some time. The few pieces of furniture scattered about were old and dusty, with the same signs of long neglect that they'd seen in the exterior of the house itself. The three windows, which from the outside had seemed so dark and threatening, could now be seen from this side to be merely incredibly dirty, with the slight frosting effect that came from years of wind-driven dust or sand slashing across them. In the shafts of dim sunlight that managed to penetrate the grime, long strands of cobweb could be seen stretching from some of the chairs to the ceiling.
"This way,"
Antuni said quietly, his voice an intrusion in the eerie atmosphere as he led them across the room to a closed door.
"He is here, Captain Card. Please, prepare yourself."
Card took a deep breath. Behind him, he heard the faint scraping sound as Shada's blaster came free of its holster.
"I'm ready," he said. "Let's get it over with."
"Indeed."
Reaching past him, Antuni touched the door control. With a faint squeak, it slid open. It was the smell that hit Card first, an odor of age and distant memories and lost hopes, an odor of sickness and tiredness, an odor of death. The room itself was small, much smaller than Card would have expected. To both sides, built-in shelves covered each of the sidewalls, on which were stacked a strange assortment of small art objects, useless-looking knick-knacks, and medical vials and equipment. A large bed took up most of the rest of the space, the foot coming to within a meter of the doorway and leaving barely enough room left over for two people to stand. And lying in the bed, beneath a stack of blankets, humming softly to himself as he stared at the ceiling, was an old man.
"George?"
Antuni called softly as he stepped through the doorway. The humming stopped, but the man's gaze remained on the ceiling.
"George, there's someone here to see you."
Card stepped in beside him, squeezing into the remaining space, his mind spinning. No. Surely this couldn't be George Cardass. Not the vigorous, hot-tempered, ambitious man who'd almost single-handedly created one of the greatest smuggling organizations ever known.
"George?"
he called carefully. The wrinkled face frowned, and the head lifted up.
"Martin?"
a quavering voice asked.
"Martin? Is that you?"
Card let his breath out in a tired sigh. The voice and the eyes. Yes, it was indeed him.
"No, George,"
he said gently. "Not Mertan. It's Card. Talon Card. You remember?" The old man's eyes blinked a couple of times.
"Card?"
he said, in the same uncertain voice.
"Is that you?"
"Yes, George. It's me," Card assured him.
"Do you remember me?"
A tentative smile started on the old man's face, fading as if the muscles were too old or too tired to hold on to it.
Yes,
he said.
No. Who are you again?
Talon Card, Card repeated. The bitter taste of defeat and disappointment and utter fatigue in his mouth. All this way. They'd come all this way to see Cardass and plead for his help. All of Card's fears about this meeting, his fears, his regrets, his guilt, all of it for nothing. The George Cardass he had lived in quiet terror of for so many years was long gone. In his place was an empty shell. Dimly, through the darkness swirling through his mind, he felt a hand on his shoulder.
"Come on, Card," Shada said quietly. There's nothing here anymore.
It was Card, right?
The old man asked. A thin arm came up from beneath the blankets, flailing a bit before the hand was able to tuck the pillows tighter behind his neck.
Taran Card?
It's Talon Card, George.
Antuni corrected, his voice that of a patient parent to a very young child.
Is there anything I can get for you?
Cardass frowned, his head settling back onto the pillow, his eyes again drifting to whatever it was he saw on the ceiling.
Shemeva Ostaran Samitas Mertan Anial,
he muttered, his voice almost inaudible.
Carmina David Shumidas Cree?
Old Tarmidian, Antuni murmured. The language of his childhood. He's been slipping into that more and more lately.
3PO? Shada prompted.
He's asking if Mertan has been by here today,
the droid translated. For once there was no mention of how many types of communication he was fluent in.
Or that nice Admiral David person.
No, neither of them,
Antuni said to the figure in the bed, motioning Card to back out of the room.
I'll be back later, George. Try to get some sleep, all right?
He followed Card out of the room and reached for the door control.
Sleep?
The old man snorted weakly, giving a cackling laugh.
Can't sleep now. Mertan, too much to do. Far too much to...
The door slid shut, mercifully cutting off the rest.
You see now how it is,
Antuni said quietly. Card nodded, the taste of ashes in his mouth. All those years. How long has he been this way?
And why did you ever bother bringing us here in the first place?
Shada demanded.
What can I say?
Antuni said.
He's old, very old, with the many and varied afflictions that so often come of long age.
His bright eyes shifted to Shada.
And as for bringing you here, you were the ones who wanted to come.
We wanted to see George Cardass,
Shada bit out.
What's in there is not what we had in mind.
It's all right, Shada, Card said. All those years. It's my fault, not Antuni's. I should have come here years ago. He blinked sudden tears from his eyes. I suppose there's only one more question to be asked. Antuni, Cardass once had a huge data card library. Do you have any idea where it might be? Antuni shrugged.
Whatever he did with it, he did it long before I came to be in his service.
Card nodded. So much for even their last hope of finding a copy of the Ka'amas document here. Wasted fears, and now a wasted trip. Suddenly, he was feeling very old. Thank you, he said, pulling out his comlink and keying it on.
Duncan?
Right here, Chief.
Duncan's voice came promptly, an edge of tautness to it.
How are things?
Running quite smoothly, thank you, Card said, giving the all-clear code response. The mission is over. Get the ship ready. We'll be leaving as soon as we get back.
Yeah, well, that might be a bit tricky,
Duncan said, his voice turning grim.
There's something about to happen here, Chief. Something big. Every ship on the field's getting tooled up for combat.
Card frowned. Are you sure?
I'm positive, Duncan
said.
There are racks of missiles being taken aboard. Gunner-type flatback suits. The works. And they seem to be arming a lot of civilian ships, too.
It's Ray Kaas and his pirates,
Antuni murmured quietly at Card's side.
It would appear one of them followed you in.
Card grimaced.
yet another piece of his carefully built-up mental picture crumbling to dust. He'd been so sure that Ray Koss had been hired and brought here by Cardass.
No one should have been able to follow us, he told Antuni. We always watch our back trail very closely.
Antuni shrugged again.
I don't know how they did it. I only know that they did. According to Admiral David, their entire fleet has now left its hidden base and is on its way to Exacron.
You knew about this before we even landed?
Shada demanded.
Why didn't you say something?
What should I have said? Antuni countered. The damage had already been done. They had found Exacron.
He gestured upward.
In fact, that was why I wanted to bring you here myself from Dayok, Captain Card. They wouldn't have been able to track my ship.
Card grimaced, as if his guilt burden hadn't been heavy enough. Now this. How long before they reach the planet?
Excuse me, 3PO spoke up before Antuni could answer. But if pirates are on their way, shouldn't we be planning our departure?
He's right, Antuni agreed. Still, there's no particular hurry for you. They won't be here for at least another 8 hours, possibly more.
What about you?
Shada asked. Antuni's mouth puckered.
I'm sure we'll be all right. I'm told the combined air space fleet is quite good.
Maybe against the occasional smuggler or rock dodger,
Shada said darkly.
But this is Ray Koss we're talking about.
It's our trouble, not yours,
Antuni said firmly.
You'd best make preparations to go.
The comlink Card suddenly realized was still on.
Duncan, he called. You get all that?
We got it, Chief. You still want me to get the ship ready?
Card looked past Antuni at the room's darkened windows. Beyond those windows were people his actions, however unintended, had put in deadly danger. Which meant there really wasn't any decision here to be made.
Yes, get it ready,
he told Duncan. But get it ready for full combat. He looked back at Antuni.
We're going to stay and fight.